With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of The Front Three. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me, as always, is the one and only Lawrence McKenna and, of course, the Statman himself, David O'Brien.
Hello, Adam.
Who joins us having just fallen off of his bike.
Yeah, it wasn't good banter, to be honest. The road really did me over.
Shit banter.
Did you get up and hit the road and say, like, that's bad banter, road?
What are you doing? You're an idiot. Get out of my way.
Dave, what happened?
Well, I was cycling through a traffic light and my chain just came off and it just flung me off the bike, roly-poly, hand is a mess, terrible banter.
You and Kanye West have the same problem, the chain's too heavy.
Ooh.
And yet you're soldiering through, Dave, you're here.
I'm here with the lads.
Sorry, what is going on? Are we in some sort of carling ad? Guys, there's great banter and I'm here with the lads, you absolute legend.
You've ruined the moment, Lawrence. Yeah. We were enjoying some great lad banter there. Yeah. Anyway,
Come on.
Thank you once again to everyone listening, for downloading The Front Three, whether you're listening through SoundCloud or iTunes. If you are listening through iTunes, do make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. You wouldn't want that. Also, be sure to review our podcast because iTunes likes that sort of thing. This week's comment of the week is from one such review from a user coincidentally called Great Podcast TF3. He said, I really like listening to The Front Three when I get back from school. It's great banter.
Oh, yes, there is.
Funny, true stats from
Lawrence.
Great and smart facts from Dave. And to round it all off, the leader, Adam, sticks it together with great information and banter. He's used banter twice in the review, and that's why I liked it.
Yeah,
really?
Good lad.
Which Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle are you, Adam? Does that make you Leonardo?
Well, technically, yes. I'd say you're Raphael in many ways.
Oh, I'm disappointed by that.
And Dave is
Dave Donatello.
Obviously. No, he's Michelangelo, mate. What are you talking
about? Come on, bro. Give me a good one. Say, Lawrence.
Lovely comment anyway there. Thank you for the kind words. If you do want to write us a review, please go ahead and do so on iTunes. And you can also send us comments, suggestions, and questions on Twitter at @TheFront3. So go and follow us there. But anyway, on with this week's episode. Where else is there to start, gents, but with John Stones? So yesterday, he handed in a transfer request to Everton, a written transfer request, no less, to force for a move to Chelsea. This saga has been rumbling on for a few weeks now, Lawrence. Surely his leaving Goodison Park is inevitable now.
Maybe it's at this point that John Stones wanted to leave things amicably, or he was still due to make a decision. I mean, that's the point, though, is that Roberto Martinez almost preempted this the other day and said, if he comes with a transfer request now, he's too late. He should have done this earlier. And to some extent, you see that he's right in saying that because it's the 25th of August. Time of recording, it's the 25th of August. And to come in this late and sort of leave your club in the lurch, just you're supposed to have some sort of care for, is a little bit. It strikes me as a little bit strange. But it also strikes me as, well, maybe he's trying to, you know, force the club's hand. And I just sort of think it's similar to the Seydou Berahino thing, because they could just say, well, you know what, we reject it and we want whatever price it is that we want for it. And if you are going to go and you don't want to be here, then we're going to get a really good price for you.
And that price is looking like it's going to be £40 million,
yeah,
Dave.
That's gone up. That's gone up from 25 a few years ago.
It's crazy, isn't it? Prices rising for English players. It's just, it's absolutely nuts. Obviously, we know he's a very good defender, but he's still young and he's raw. He needs time to play football. And for me, again, he's, you know, the Raheem Sterling thing. Obviously, Sterling this season has played a lot of football for City. I didn't expect that to happen, but he's done very, very well. Is John Stones going to get into the Chelsea first team?
That's a great question. You know, is he not now? But you look at Terry, and there's been a lot of discussion about Terry's role in this Chelsea team in the opening games of the season, taken off by Mourinho at half-time against Manchester City, sent off at the weekend against West Brom. And a lot of people are sort of suggesting that maybe this is the beginning of the end for John Terry, and John Stones is actually going to get a lot more game time than you maybe would have thought before the season started.
Guardian podcasts were dead on when they said it. I think that at the moment it would seem that someone like Stones needs a marshal alongside him, and that's possibly not Cahill, and that's definitely not Zuma. But there are rumblings that Mourinho is not even talking to John Terry at this stage, and I don't know if that's true. But there are rumblings that, you know,
that's
when players need to go, then Mourinho almost gets to the point where he kind of goes, would someone tell John Terry that?
What do you think has changed between this season and last season then? Because like we were saying last season, John Terry played every single minute of Chelsea's Premier League campaign. He was superb by all accounts, especially towards the end of the season. What's changed over the 3 months of the summer then? Or are we just blowing this all out of proportion?
I think that's what it is, isn't it? It's natural variation. You know, John Terry was, because he was so consistent last season, he's going to have a few bad performances, and he's had two pretty, you know, his performance against City, I do think that Mourinho has thrown the blame on him. He really has. Mourinho, you know, I'd said before about the whole single pivot versus Silva should have happened. Matic should have been on Silva. John Terry's getting the blame for something that potentially isn't really his fault. The sending off, fair enough, but that happens. Defenders get sent off. Player of John Terry's aggressive nature and how he's, you know, very vocal, he's going to get sent off. For me, it's just a bit of natural variation, and it's been blown massively out of proportion. But if the reports are correct with Mourinho, then, you know, it's looking like the potential John Stones move is on then.
Well, I mean, it should be on, shouldn't it? But then also, you would say the reason John Terry got sent off in this match was because of poor tactical play from Mourinho, that he had a fullback on one side that was really left far up the pitch, and it sort of left John Terry exposed. Yep.
I want to move on from the transfer news a little bit. We'll come back to all the gossip, of course. But I want to talk a little bit about Arsenal. So on Monday night, they drew 0-0 against Liverpool.
Brilliant.
Arguable, great game. Very entertaining game, has to be said. But arguable whether they should have drawn. There was an offside goal. Aaron Ramsey banging one in from an offside position. Brendan Rodgers brilliantly saying in his post-match press conference that it was a fantastic decision. Ramsey's shirt was offside, which is interesting.
either way,
it was margin.
Play the ball with your shirt.
But wherever the shirt is, you'll be able to play the ball with. I don't think Brendan Rodgers is right with that. Aaron Ramsey was massively onside.
I wouldn't say massively. I'd say it's marginal.
He's onside. It's nothing.
Massively onside.
Doesn't matter how close. No, you're onside or you're not. He was onside. I know that camera angle sort of angle, but he's onside.
Well, it brought up an interesting question a lot of people are asking, including Milo. Milo Fitz on Twitter. He's saying a very relevant question would be, do we need instant video technology in football? For me, it's a no-brainer. It's a yes, surely.
No, you shouldn't have video technology. The referees, the linesmen and the referees and the officials should be able to call those decisions. Goals, maybe not. Goal line technology is a brilliant thing. But if we get the game too stop-starty where, you know, something like that happens in the game, it stops and then you've got to check the TV and whatever. The tempo goes out of football.
Maybe that's not it though, Dave. Maybe you've just got, I mean, it's difficult for the referee who's on the pitch. So what if he had a team of people in his ear who are just saying that's onside, that's a goal,
again, that's judgment. So we've seen a number of examples this weekend where there's been players that have been marginally onside, offside, you know, Lukaku, Wayne Rooney, Aaron Ramsey, where these decisions are 50-50, and I think that it goes down to the human
This isn't a 50-50 decision. This is a decision that the game could have turned on, because it was 1-0 to Arsenal at that point. Arsenal would have gone on and won the game, but it certainly would have put them in an advantageous position. And then throughout the rest of the second half, Liverpool were the team on the front foot. And it's strange, because all you need is three people watching the TV in your ear who can all go, that's onside, right? In his ear, straight away, that's onside, allow that. And you don't have to, you know, because you've got a bit of a stoppage in play anyway, where the player's turning around going, oh, well, God, I wish that, you know, What is it? So what's the problem there? If you're only doing it, if you're making it in fast decisions, what's your problem?
I'd argue that it's down to the officiating. Then the linesman hasn't done his job properly. Obviously, he hasn't done his job.
Then that's where you covered yourself.
Then you shouldn't have to cover. If the linesman is good enough at his job and can call off the offside decision correctly, we do not need the technology. So is it
linesmen? Yeah, but you can't go for the error a human error. It doesn't matter how good you are, you're going to make errors.
I understand that, but then this is the top level. This is a mass. You know, I think. Again, this goes back to the money in the game, and it's being, you know, it's not being put in the correct places. You know, coaches aren't getting enough, referees aren't getting enough money in training. The Premier League is one of the top leagues in the world, and we need to spend more money, more time in developing young linesmen, referees, and whatever. Is the linesman a specialist position? That's a question. Personally, I don't know whether it is.
I mean, it's specialist in the sense that if you watch them training, then yes, that's a very specialist position because those guys are working very hard at that. And especially if you go to the World Cup, then that becomes especially honed. But my point would be, what's the problem with having a good linesman and then a backup to that good linesman that's three people who are trained to use video technology and trained to quickly speak into the referee's ear and his linesman team and say, you know, that's onside, that's offside. I don't see what the problem is there.
No, I think that's fair. It's just, I think it I don't know. It's just, it seems that we just don't want the tempo to go in the game. That's the only thing that I'm sort of worried about.
Let me move on to the other aspect of the game, which was, of course, Gary Neville's talking point beforehand.
Yeah.
So before the game on Monday Night Football on Sky Sports here in the UK, Gary Neville was suggesting that Arsenal have been missing a powerful presence in midfield since the Invincibles of 2004. So he was sort of saying that Arsene Wenger's failure to sign such a player was arrogance on his part. When Thierry Henry suggested it wasn't arrogance, but belief, you know, belief that Arsenal can play their style, play their way against any team and win.
Yeah.
Neville said it's actually therefore a misheld belief and that Wenger must be naive in failing to sign, you know, that sort of player. So what do you make of this argument, Lawrence? Do you think, I mean, it's been going on for years, people have been saying this about Arsenal in their midfield. It's lacking that power, it's lacking that presence. Do you think Arsene Wenger is naive or is he arrogant or is he neither?
I don't think he's either, to be honest. I think it's good analysis in the first place that they do need someone in the midfield. But I don't know if you can then transpose feelings or ideas onto someone and say that. I mean, they're probably much closer to Arsene Wenger than I am, especially Thierry Henry. And
That was the interesting part, wasn't it? When Henry said that, no, it's just Arsenal believe they can play.
But
isn't that naivety then?
Well, I don't, but what is naive about trying to instill a belief if that's,
well,
you know,
the fact they haven't won, I know they won the FA Cup in the last years, but they haven't competed for the Premier League, for the Champions League for years. And everyone has identified that as a glaring weakness in their squad. So sure, isn't it naive? And we saw Arsenal last season against Man City go and play a sensible game. They adapted, won the game, and everyone was praising them.
The problem is that what we've got there is we can't say Wenger is naive. You could say it may be naive for him not to sign another central midfielder and put it in there. But for Wenger to hold the belief that his team is good enough may not be naive because he's much closer to the team, etc. All I'm saying is maybe save the judgment and just say, look, it's quite clear that Arsenal do need someone with strength in there. If Wenger believes those, you know, that it's one of the players within the squad, or we outside are analysing and saying, this is what you need. We don't know what Wenger's belief is that he needs. Maybe he doesn't want to play a midfielder in there like that.
It's tactically naive. It's massive that the whole point of having a midfield, you know, two ball players in midfield is that you have one to cover. At the moment, Coquelin hasn't developed enough physically to play that role. Benteke absolutely, you know, that zone that Benteke was picking up the ball in, he won something like 16 aerial duels yesterday. It was absolutely physically so. The Arsenal back four couldn't deal with Christian Benteke. And one of my big concerns is that Coquelin can't do that job. He, you know, you look at Busquets, who plays for Barcelona. Arsenal are very similar in their footballing beliefs to Barcelona. They always have a physical midfielder in Sergio Busquets, who's one of the best players in the world. Arsenal don't have that. And that's, until they get that, they aren't going to win the Premier League. And that is crystal clear for me last night. Also, their midfield balance was wrong in terms of they had Coquelin, Santi Cazorla, and then Ozil. Like, so you've got a player sitting in front of your back four, you've got a deep-lying ball player in Cazorla, and then you've got Mesut Ozil that's drifting too far forward. It was a very disjoint midfield for me. You should have switched out Ozil and you should have played Ramsey in that center of the park of the pitch. Would have worked. That would have been perfect.
Liverpool also played a very... But they played a good... They played a weird shape, though, didn't they? Because they played like a... obviously, the most deep-lying player was Lucas always.
Yes.
But then there was Milner and Chan ahead of... Like, Chan was in a weird sort of all-roaming, slightly towards the left-hand side kind of role, just near Coutinho, so he gave him an out, and then he was switching around. And it looked nice and fluid. For me, it worked reasonably well. I would still say, if I was to take a player out of the midfield, and this might sound naive, then I would much rather... If I was to upgrade any player in there, it would be Lucas within the midfield.
Let me ask you this. So looking at that game last night,
on Monday,
as Dave is sort of pointing to there, Arsenal were overrunning midfield in many ways. They're exposed at the back.
They also had the Man United problem of being far too narrow in attack. I don't understand why Ramsey's playing on the right, and then the like of Oxlade-Chamberlain, who has been fantastic for the last 2 years in terms of being a winger, and he's not playing. It's just, for me, Wenger is it really confuses me. It's like basic stuff. I just don't understand why they're doing certain things. Like, Arsenal have the talent, have the ability. Why for me you're playing Ozil centrally when you've got a player of Alexis Sanchez's quality who plays that position better than Ozil?
I feel like Liverpool shut them down quite well and shut down those moves quite well. He made the changes too late. Someone in my office was making the point today they would have liked to see Oxlade-Chamberlain running at Gomez for maybe 45 minutes. Even then, I mean, I think one of the best players, that part of the reason that Arsenal's width was shut down was because Klein and Gomez did a good job at shutting their width down whenever they got it. Gomez nomination man of the match last night, just from his defensive display and then bringing the ball forward.
Do you think either of these teams are title challengers? Before the start of the season, we were saying Arsenal, they strengthen where they needed to strengthen. These guys are going to actually compete this season. We're three games in. They haven't scored for, six consecutive games at home, stretching back to last season. They've only won once. I feel like before the season started, we were talking about Man United as title challengers, Arsenal, maybe even Liverpool a little bit.
No.
But you look at it now, Man City,
It
looks like almost a foregone conclusion. Do you think we're in for another Premier League season where it is almost a boring title race?
No, I think it's going to be quite interesting between the two clubs, well, Man City and Chelsea. I think Arsenal and Man United and Liverpool, they lack someone of that next level quality. That will sort of take them to that next level. I don't mean that, like, for example, you've got Alexis Sanchez at Arsenal, you have Bastian Schweinsteiger at United, you have a player of Coutinho's quality at Liverpool, but I think they all miss a little cog. Like, for example, Liverpool do miss a defensive midfielder, Arsenal miss a defensive midfielder, United miss a striker, they miss a centre-back, they miss a, you know, there's a whole host of problems there. But I think it's like there's another, to get to the Man City and Chelsea level, Arsenal, Man United and Liverpool have to like invest very heavily in really, really good players. And at the moment in world football, there isn't too many of those players. So I just feel that it's kind of, there's an extra step that these clubs have got to take. And it's very difficult at this current market to take those steps.
It's also down to looking at, do you want to buy those steps? Or do you want to sort of say, right, our aim this season is fourth place. So say Liverpool would say this season, our aim is fourth place. And then we go from there.
Yeah.
So the issue there is you're relying on someone like Coutinho to take it to the next level.
Yeah. But then
he then stay?
You had Gomez, who was pretty good, and you had that lad that came on, Jordan, is it Ross?
Jordan Roster, yeah.
Yeah, who looked very, very neat in possession. I've said before that I prefer to go down the Liverpool route at the moment, where they're looking like they're investing in youth. And it's the correct way to go if you want to get to that next level, because then you've got a generation of players that get to the next level at the same time, then bang, your title challengers. You know what I mean?
If they stay dedicated, and if you then when they get to, I mean, I
but loyalty is key, isn't it?
I saw some very weird comments today from Franny Lee. Now today he was making comments, and I think his judgment sounds a little bit off on this. He basically said Liverpool were naive when they offered Sterling $100,000. A week or whatever, and that they allowed him to sit on that contract for such a long time. I think what he's saying there is that money talks for some people in the game. I don't think it talks for everyone in the game, but he's his analysis, I think, is slightly off. Because if you look at, and we'll probably come into this later, but the Borussia Dortmund squad, or you look at the even the Bayern Munich squad, there are some guys within there who are not on a massive wage. Like Vidal, what's he on? 90 grand a week.
95 nothing.
95 grand. What's Sterling on?
Got 200 odd, isn't
he? In comparison. What's Marco Reus on at Dortmund?
It's like 80k, I think, something like that.
Exactly. So don't tell me that money's the only thing that speaks. Franz Lee was saying today Liverpool were naive. And it was possibly, he's possibly talking about a very specific case with Raheem Sterling. But he says they were naive to think that they could let him sit or even offer him 100k and that he would take it. I don't think that's true. And I think that's Manchester City putting out almost a form of propaganda there, saying, you've got to pay your money if you want your top class players. That's not true. Go to the Bundesliga, go to other leagues, and you'll see that there's more value than just the money.
This is very interesting. I feel we've got slightly off topic, though, from just talking about the title race, but it's still very interesting nonetheless.
What we are saying, though, is that the title will be generally, most people, the table numbers are decided by A, how much money you spend, and B, how much money you spend on wages. And that's not true in every country.
So Dave was sort of making the point there about, you know, not having superstar player, those sort of players you can take to the next level. Mm-hmm. You'd argue Manchester United are one of those teams. So they have had a slow start to the season, drawing 0-0 again at the weekend to Newcastle. They've only scored two goals, one of which was their own, obviously Januzaj against Villa. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of discussion about Wayne Rooney specifically after this game. A lot of United fans quite angry with his performance. And there's been a lot of discussion about, similar to John Terry, about Wayne Rooney's role in the team and whether, you know, whether he may be past his best, Dave. I think that's fair to say.
He's been past his best since 2011. And that's the blatant honest truth. And you can't make those opinions on something like Twitter or something like YouTube because you get hammered. This has been my belief since that time. But
I think that's quite popular opinion at the moment.
But then it's the popular opinion now. When I made that point then, I was absolutely hammered for it. Absolutely hammered. But the thing with Wayne Rooney, he peaked when he was young. He was a young talent come to the game, peaked probably, you know, 2007, 2008, when he sort of is in mid-20s, is a different player. At the moment, Wayne Rooney isn't giving enough for Manchester United. You see the likes of Javier Hernandez on the bench that gives his absolute all when he comes on, nearly scored against Newcastle, and it's confusing. Van Gaal's kind of shot himself in the foot by making Wayne Rooney captain. It's craziness. Imagine if Schweinsteiger was at the club last season. Would Wayne Rooney be captain? 100% no. But it's an issue. It's a big issue for Manchester United. They lack goals going forward, and Wayne Rooney hasn't scored in 15 league games away from home. Mm. So you're looking at Swansea away. Is he going to break that duck? It's just questions there, it really is.
Lawrence, what do you make of that point of what Dave sort of saying there about how he did start young? He was 16, I believe, when he broke into the first team at Everton, played a full season in his first, you know, his debut season at Everton. He's been playing now since 2002. He started. He's been playing for a long time. He's almost 30. He's going to be 30 in October. So do you think this is simply a case of the amount of minutes? I saw someone comparing the amount of minutes that, say, Wayne Rooney, 29, has played compared to Pedro, who's 28. This is on the second captain's podcast. And they're basically making the point that you could fit Pedro's career 2.5 times into Rooney's in terms of minutes played and games played, that sort of thing. So he's played an awful lot of football. Is it that now all catching up with?
Yeah, to be honest, I can't comment on that because I don't know how that compares to, say, other England players. So I don't know, you know, how does that compare to Paul Scholes? How does that compare to Steven Gerrard? How does it compare to anyone? You know, how far does he run each game? Is he running further than anyone else? I'd also say, how well does he look after himself in the off-season? A lot of people argue that he doesn't, look after himself well. And so you'd also say it's at that point, you know, we have to, you know, your analysis of that is not necessarily critical, but it certainly goes down the road of, Wayne, you've got to look after yourself as well. And you've not always done yourself favours.
Yeah, that's just the fact.
And it's partly sort of, well, if you want to demand those, I mean, you know, the few seasons ago, we were saying basically to him, if you want to demand those high wages, you've pretty much got to turn up in some sort of shape we can work with here.
Do you think there's a criticism of Van Gaal in here, though, Dave? Because you're looking at Rooney, as people are saying, he's lost that explosive pace. Maybe he's not a player who should be playing at number 9 role. I know last season it was the media was sort of hammering Van Gaal for not playing him up front, but it feels like Rooney is playing in the wrong position in some ways, and maybe Van Gaal should have identified that, should have strengthened the squad in certain areas, for example, up front, instead of letting Van Persie go, etc.
So I did an analysis on YouTube this weekend of Man United's failings versus Newcastle. To put it the long and short of it, you've got to check it out. It's pretty interesting.
What's your channel name?
Oh, it's just Dave O'Brien TV. Check it on YouTube. I'll put a link there.
Dave O'Brien TV, brilliant.
TV, brilliant stuff. But anyway, no, it's shortcomings of Man United. They don't play with enough width at the moment. The space in the middle gets absolutely overloaded with bodies. It's too easy to defend against and so forth. But I think the really interesting thing about Louis van Gaal is that sometimes in his career, he hasn't got the best out of forwards. You know, you look at the likes of Luca Toni, who he fell out with. His scoring record before before LVG joined Bayern Munich was ridiculous. It was like 30 goals a season, and that's what he did. And you look at Wayne Rooney, and then you look at Falcao, and you look at Van Persie last season. These are all number nines that have got quality, and none of them performed. This is the thing. Man United have got to free the space up on the pitch for the number nine to do some damage. And I don't think Wayne Rooney's the right man for Louis van Gaal. I think we need a younger striker in there that's got a bit more movement about and that does go pull wide and whatever, not just come deep. Wayne Rooney comes to the ball a little bit too much. We need a player that's going to go in behind, going to work the channels. It's sort of a different striker than what we've got at the moment. And
maybe Neymar, eh?
Neymar, okay. What, 240 million euros or whatever it
absolute
was.
Absolute bargain.
A load of rubbish.
Let me move on quickly. Let's talk briefly about Slaven Bilic, Dave. So this is someone who you tipped to be sacked, the first Premier League manager to be sacked at the start of the season. Things were looking pretty rosy when they beat Arsenal at the Emirates in the first game there. But they're looking a little bit disorganised at the moment. You know, they say a week is a long time in football. 2 weeks is an eternity, obviously. Now we've had back-to-back defeats at home to Leicester and Bournemouth for West Ham. So do you think the fans should be worried, Dave?
I just think that sometimes Bilic doesn't know his best team. We had that with Croatia where he had so many good central midfielders that he played a really weird system. Like the system was so, so weird. It was sort of, it was like a midfield diamond, not a midfield diamond. I think we're having that same problem at West Ham. He doesn't know his best team. He's playing a very narrow system. You know, he's either playing a sort of 4-4-2 narrow diamond or he's playing a 4-3-2-1 with the two attacking midfielders being quite narrow. For me, Bilic lacks something. He just lacks something. I don't know what it is, but he lacks something.
Lawrence, what do you think? Do you think the fans should be worried because, you know, things... I know it's only 3 games in, but Sam Allardyce last season, safe pair of hands... Next season, they're moving into the Olympic Stadium. It would be a bit of a disaster if they did that in the Championship, for example. Getting ahead of myself, but
I would say he lacks a synergy between sometimes with the things that he says and his character, and then the way that he is as a manager. Maybe that's the lack that Dave's talking about. The problem is that sometimes if you have a character that maybe doesn't always match up and you don't express it very well or you express controversial views, then some people are going to try and string you up. And when I say string you up, I don't mean that in a bad way. But I mean, he said some strange things in his time. At one point, we've got to remember this. This was a man that the English media was pretty much obsessed with any time that they had an international match because it was like, isn't he refreshing, et cetera, et cetera. And the more that people looked into it, the more that they found him to be maybe quite a divisive character. And sometimes that's it. There's a very fine line between genius and crazy, and you know, people are very quick to flick between the two in terms of their public character. I'd say there's probably a lot of value in him behind closed doors, but I think also when we come down to analysing him, like Dave says, there's something you can't quite put your finger on, and a lot of that's going to be down to the almost intangible nature of character in football.
There's another man that you can't quite put a finger on, I'd say. The so-called Tinker Man, not so much nowadays, Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah.
So things are looking well for him with Leicester City at the moment in comparison to Bilic.
Yeah.
So another point against Spurs on the weekend, a 1-1 draw. What do you think he's been doing well at Leicester? He's obviously carrying on the good work of Nigel Pearson, from last season when, you know, the team were in great form. What has he done or what has he brought to the team?
I think the really interesting part of that is that he has kept the form of Leicester City. Leicester City was so good at the end of last season. A really interesting stat that I've just sort of fell on before the show is 71% of Leicester City's goals in the Premier League this season have come in the first half. They're very, very quick to start. They get in your face. They put pressure on. And they've changed their system. They've sort of gone to a bit more of a traditional 4-4-2 this season. But it's got the similar traits as the 4-3-3 they played last year, where it is a very fast start. But then you look at this, you know, some more stats that jump out for you is Leicester City have completed 565 passes in the Premier League this season. That's a good 150 less than any other team. So they've got the worst pass completion numbers. Then you look at their possession, 43% their average possession is this season. The question now comes is, can they continue this form? They are quite bad factors. Like, you can't continue a really good attacking performance over and over again when you don't have that much ball. They're literally taking their chances. Mahrez is actually on fire. You know, Vardy's on fire. These players are going to drop out of form, and that's when we're going to see the tinker man in action. What is he going to do next?
Exactly. How does he tinker? And when a team finds him out, or when a team, not finds him out, but when a team says, okay, we've worked out what you do already, because essentially it's so early on in the season that people are almost expecting, well, they maybe were expecting a more bullyish style, more Leicester of last season to step out, and it just didn't happen. And now I'm imagining, you know, what's going to happen when they come up against a side that sits back and says, all right, fine, like, you want your low possession, that's fine. We'll soak up all that. And, you know, we'll pick out maybe an Okazaki or a Vardy for special treatment from any one of our top class players, and we'll see how well you do. But then you'd say that doesn't stop them from making 40 points, because there's going to be enough teams they can pick on out there, aren't there?
Now,
good point.
I want to move on to perhaps, I think it's fair to say, all of our favourite bit of news this week.
Yeah.
And that is the news that Jermaine Defoe is looking to hire an executive personal assistant.
Yes.
So, Lawrence, a footballer personal, he's looking for a personal assistant. What would you think those responsibilities would entail normally?
I mean, there's a very big difference, Adam, between an executive personal assistant.
True.
And a personal
assistant. True.
I mean, we all know, we've all had one.
of course, yeah.
It's that, you know, maybe if you haven't had an executive personal experience assistant like, you know, Jermaine and I have, then you won't really realise the importance of it. Until you Now, with a high-profile player like Jermaine, who's played around the world, he's been integrated into such squads as Tottenham, Toronto, names in there. You know, he's looking for someone that's 24/7, 369, baby. 25 days, 25 days a year.
Is.
You want holiday? No, you've got to be on call 24/7, bitch. If you want to get in this game, you've got to be willing to put in the hours. You want to work for Jermaine Defoe? Only one of the biggest names in the game. Who's he sponsored by? That's right, the Three Stripes of Germany. Only Adidas got the biggest in the world. You've got to be willing to sit on that, man. You've got to be willing to be there. He has kids. He has a fucking wife, Adam. Do you not realise the pressure that's on this motherfucker?
For those who haven't seen this advert, basically, it's been doing the rounds. You must have seen it. But Jermaine Defoe is looking to hire an executive personal assistant with a...
It means someone who lives for you. You've got to Jermaine's personal needs.
Let me run through the responsibilities.
House refurbishments, sourcing interior designers, and everyday tasks. Go fuck yourself.
Which actually also includes making sure the fridge is stocked for when Jermaine is away, making sure the plants are watered, making sure the house is clean, selecting and organising wardrobe with specific designers for special events and appearances. It also includes booking all social events, including the theatre, concerts, cinema, musicals, restaurant bookings and recommendations, spa days and family outings. But when it gets really interesting... is when the responsibilities...
Select and organise wardrobe with specific designers for special events.
Yes.
Oh, but my God.
The bit where it gets really interesting is when the responsibilities expand to producing iPhone apps.
That was the key one, that you've got to wipe his arse and make him an app at the same time.
And helping to create a global brand for the Jermaine Defoe name, growing his online database on his website, Twitter, Facebook and other social platforms, gaining further recognition within the media. You've also got to be able to plan early events, including family birthdays, family holidays and individual holidays, create an inventory for holiday villas and manage and organise individual family members, of which there are apparently four, plus the family pets. You've also got to plan and organise special yearly calendar events such as Mother's Day, Black History Month and Christmas, and you've got to be on call 24/7. Now, what worries me about
office
this...
office hours, I will remind you, are 9:30 to 5:30.
This is an entire life that he's asking someone to run, essentially. Like you're saying, 24/7, every aspect of Jermaine Defoe's life has to be controlled. What is there left for Jermaine Defoe to do?
Nothing. Jermaine, I wasn't surprised when I'm like going shit what for Jermaine.
What is there left for the assistant to do? If you took this job, what, you're not going to have any time to run your own life. You're going to be busy running five people's lives plus the family pet.
That would be my point here is, like, first of all, if such a person like this exists, I would love to meet them. Because if you can do that...
My God, that is... Oh.
Like, why would you do it for somebody else? That's the thing. I'm sure you'd be like ultimately successful already if you can do all those things, all those skills.
That's like, what I'm thinking. If you can do all of that, there's no way that you think, oh, here's the height of what I desire in life, organising Jermaine Defoe's life.
It's about liaising with sponsors as well. It's like there's some sort of corporate aspect to it, which is just...
I'll tell you what, we should apply for it, lads.
Mate, it is a job for free people. It is definitely a job for free people.
If we split 60k three ways, guys, we can live off of some cash.
He is offering 55 to 59k to Jermaine Defoe for this role, which is a fair amount of money, but for that job...
No, I mean, that's
a good amount of money, but for that job, it's not, is it? You're literally doing free people's jobs.
You'd probably be on less than minimum wage, wouldn't you, if you worked it out?
Yeah. There's three things. I mean, if you were to work 24/7, 365, then I would say that's so. God. But my point here, Adam, would be he's made two classic mistakes. First of all, he called his business Defoe Enterprise Limited.
Terrible.
All right.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Second of all, he advertised on a website called Sex in the City.
As in, like, secretaries in the city.
Yeah. If you're advertising on that website, I don't know what you think you're going to get as an application back, right? At what point?
We all know what Jermaine likes.
I know the first place to go for a top-class executive personal assistant, Sex and the City. Oh, there we go. Perfect. And the application's up. Oh, and I need someone who's going to organise to take it down.
I think what highlights perhaps... how unfair the pay is the fact that John Shelby a few weeks ago was advertising for a personal chef. He was offering 65 grand just to cook.
But Adam, that chef had to be able to make an app as well. don't forget this.
He was just omelets he was making. Anyway, look, it was hilarious and incredibly ill-conceived, if I do say so myself.
If someone's got the job, good luck to you.
Yeah, my God, you're going to need it. Let's talk a little bit briefly about a little bit of transfer news before we go on to the questions. Balotelli has gone on loan to AC Milan for the season, Lawrence.
Looks great.
Happy to see the back of him? Or I know you have a little bit of sympathy for this player.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just really sick of all the really poor analysis of Mario Balotelli. I know people are sick of the narrative, but don't have a go at the guy personally. Like, I know people are talking about ego or these kind of things. When I hadn't read his story and kind of the way that he got to where he is now until he signed for Liverpool. I've read bits here and there, but I mean, if you go and read it, then you realize that he's had quite a lot to kind of work with and against and how his construction of identity and all the people who are around him, all those kind of things. And yeah, sure. There's been a lot of good things that have happened in his life, but that, like, all those things, you almost need to like listen to a Kanye West album and be like, you know, go listen to Welcome to Heartbreak. And it's like, you know, my friends show me pictures of his kids and I'll come show his pictures of my cribs. It's like, it's kind of similar to that. Like, you imagine Mario listening to that and being like, yeah, I totally relate to this. But at the same time, you sort of think, well, there's a bittersweet nature to it. So I'm not glad to see the back of him. I would have loved to see him do well at Liverpool. I just wish him the best. I hope he does well at AC Milan and I hope that he finds a place. The problem is, it's almost if he keeps making bad decisions as to where to go, I think, you know, the point was made not longer. Would it be good if he took a step down to lead?
Yeah, I think this is last chance. This is absolute last chance, and I think that
we can't keep saying last chance.
But hold on.
If we keep saying last chance, we said that at Liverpool. We said that at AC. But now it is.
He came out and said that. Look, this I've got to work. I've got this. This year is so important for me as a player because I've got to perform. And AC Milan right now, for me, it's like the perfect environment for Balotelli. They're lacking somebody like Balotelli in their side that's explosive, that can do something out of nothing. They played at the weekend against Fiorentina. They got beat 2-0. They played two strikers very, very similar to each other, Luis Adriano and Bakker, both goal scorers. Get Balotelli with one of those. You could see something magical happening. And you look at Mihailovic.
But
it's a bit different because Milan are in transition. Milan need these players. They need this sort of maverick in a way. I think that Mihailovic needs a maverick. Mihailovic is a maverick in his own right, and he needs somebody on the pitch that's in his own sort of style and ability. And I kind of think this move's going to be good for him.
Let me move on to Juan Cuadrado, who's another player whose move didn't quite work out. He joined Chelsea just in January for around £26 million, I believe, from Fiorentina.
Mm-hmm.
He started a handful of games, and now he's going on loan to Juventus for the season. Dave, what's happened there? Because this is a bizarre one.
He just kills attacking midfielders. He's done it time and time and again. He's killed Oscar. Willian. Yeah. He's killed whoever. He's killed Shirley. A player of Cuadrado's ability that was carrying Fiorentina for about 2 years, playing attacking midfield and drifting around, creating things, scoring brilliant goals, goes to Chelsea and he's told to like live in this tactical defensive structure, and his freedom goes, confidence goes. And he is a fantastic signing for Juventus. Perfect for what they need. If Juventus put Cuadrado at number 10 in top of their tip of their diamond, they can do some big things this year.
Other transfer news, Benzema has dismissed speculation linking him with Arsenal in interesting fashion on Twitter, saying,
in English,
this is my home. For all those clowns who want to make believe things at my fans,
yeah,
this
Edward
is my
Wood.
Home, a la Madrid. So he's not going to Arsenal. That puts an end to that. We've also got Saido Berahino. The saga of him going to Tottenham continues to rumble on. He's handed in a transfer request. It's been rejected.
How do you know it's Tottenham?
Sorry?
Ooh. How do you know it's Tottenham? West Brom have come out with a statement saying that they've had 15 clubs interested.
Well, you know.
He might be angling for a move to QPR.
He could, but I'm going to assume one of those clubs is Tottenham. Sky Sports, yesterday reporting that Spurs made an improved £21 million bid, which has been rejected again. Dave, surely West Brom are just trying to drive the price up to £25 million, get it to that asking price, and then they will allow him to go, seeing as they've signed reinforcements up front.
It's mad. He's £22 million for a player that scored... 25. I think he scored something like 10 goals, not for penalties.
I'm shocked. I'm surprised at this one, because like I was saying last week, his finishing this season has evidently been poor.
It's mad.
Why is this someone we're going to spend that amount of money on?
Don't get it, mate. Ng is a better prospect. I mentioned that before. Ng is a better player. You've already signed Ng. Signing someone like Berahino is going to reduce Ng's minutes. And it's crazy. It's crazy money for an English player again.
Wrap up the Spurs news there. The Guardian yesterday reporting that Spurs are in for Asai Ilaramendi, the Real Madrid midfielder. According to the Guardian... I'm going to say that again because someone just came in. Apparently, Spurs are also weighing up a move for Asai Ilaramendi. That's according to The Guardian. Wanyama, also someone being linked with Tottenham, another midfielder. So out of those two, Lawrence, who do you think Spurs should be sort of going for? It's obviously an area in which we need to improve. Are these the guys to strengthen?
I'd love to see what Ilaramendi does.
Yeah, he hasn't really been given a fair...
Crack.
Yeah, at Real Madrid.
Well, I mean, at times he's been given a crack. I'd say at Real Madrid it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? Because, whether you get a fair crack or not, you're probably still a great player, and there are a number of players that move on from there and still do great. So maybe it's sort of worth him playing in another side where maybe some of his qualities will be better appreciated. Do you really think he'll fit that well into the Spurs team, though? Like, tactically?
Well, I mean, we do need that sort of powerful presence. We need someone who can break up play in the middle of the park. Ryan Mason... is a good player. He's someone I like a lot, but we need reinforcement. I wouldn't trust Dyer in that position at all, let alone centre back. But I think I'm not a massive fan of Wanyama myself, so I think someone like Ilaramendi could be an interesting. Wanyama's good, but I'm not dying to see him in a Spurs shirt or anything. But
he does sort of fit that ilk of Spurs players that Spurs would sign, and yeah, kind of goes,
but I mean,
oh God, why the hell did we? Yeah, he looked great there.
Yeah, we like Dembele. Dembele was another player. He looked great at Fulham. He looked fantastic, and he's not looking so good at Spurs. But anyway, listen, we'll wrap up the transfer talk there for now, and we'll move on to the questions. A lot of questions, so should we try and get through as many as we can?
Go for it, man.
Okay. Alex Sanchez says, do you think Alexandre Pato can revive his career? Someone who's been linked with Manchester United in the last few days.
I'd love for him to, but it's not going to be at Manchester United.
Dave, do you think he can revive his career? Does he need to move to do that?
I hope so. It seemed like it's such promise at the start. Downhill, obviously, off the pitch problems. But no, not Man United. It doesn't fit at the moment.
Here's a really interesting one from Luca K at Dreamshake on Twitter. He's saying, do you think the second striker position is dead in modern football? That is a very interesting question.
So it means that it's not dead. It's just changed, hasn't it? There's, you know, the number 10 role is maybe more prominent now. There's other, I mean, Liverpool played maybe a whole team of second strikers last night. But, you know, you drop a lot deep. So it's not dead. I'd imagine there are teams that could still play. I often wonder why, you know, what would happen if a team did just balls to the wall, sort of go, you know, we'll go, fuck it, we'll go 4-4-2.
Well, I think that's where the second striker is in a way now. You look at the likes of Atletico Madrid, the likes of Wolfsburg, it's a bit of a 4-4-2. The second striker role has evolved a little bit, where yeah, they do play the role of the, if it's a, say it's a front two, the second striker at the moment does play that role where you're playing with the target man, you're looking to run in behind, you're looking to do this, you're looking to do that, but you're also coming to the ball as well. So the role is still there. I think you look at Antoine Griezmann, obviously a fantastic footballer, the best finisher in world football, I'd say, right now. Wow. And then Kevin De Bruyne, obviously linked with Man United and Chelsea. I'd say they're the two glaring examples, but it's an interesting one. You know, we have seen the likes of David Silva come out, or, you know, ball playing attacking midfielders. It's just football. It moves in transitions. Obviously, Man United are trying to play at the moment with little success, but it's an interesting one. Yes, the second striker is alive. I think it's not dead. It's definitely alive.
Now, let me ask you this one. I really like this question. It's from Kazula Assist, Jeremy AFC, always asking great questions. He's saying, what will Wayne Rooney's legacy be? This is touching on what we were talking about earlier, saying, is he past his best? There always feels like this element of maybe, it's a harsh assessment, I'd say, but of talent unfulfilled almost. He never quite lived up to what we expected or the media built up. Is that a fair legacy?
Maybe it's expectation unfulfilled.
But unfair expectation? Or
I mean, possibly. I don't know if it's about fair. I just think there's very high expectation on him. I mean, his legacy will also certainly be one where he's remembered not as greedy, but certainly someone who's very good at negotiation.
What about the fact that he will almost...
not good at negotiation.
He will almost certainly be the all-time England scorer. He will almost certainly be the all-time Manchester United top scorer. Do you think that...
never going to go down with... You know, he's never going to go down in history... a la Ronaldo and Messi. He's never going to be at that level. He's always just a little bit below, you know.
Remember,
you look at certain players like Bobby Charlton that he's compared to quite a lot of the time. Bobby Charlton, you know, I didn't see him, but from all knowledge of him, he was a bit of a better all-round player. Wayne Rooney's fantastic. He scored loads of goals for England and Manchester United, but his legacy is never going to be where it should have been with Ronaldo Messi. You know, we mentioned before about his handling of his body and so forth. He had the potential, but maybe he had slightly the wrong attitude, chasing cash, chasing going on the piss in the summer.
Grannies. One thing
I will say is there's that old adage of people don't remember what you did, but they remember how you made them feel. And I wonder what a truism that is with Wayne Rooney. And, you know, Dave compared him to Messi and Ronaldo, and even Bobby Charlton. But you know, people look at Bobby Charlton now, or look at his legacy as a man, as a player, and you'll see a marked difference. And I know that Wayne exists in this time now, which is different to then, but certainly there are players out there who have got a different legacy to Wayne, and they were certainly a lot less in the public eye.
Lovely stuff. I enjoyed that very much. Joe Hamlin asks, would David Moyes play nicer football with this United squad than Louis van Gaal is currently playing? Dave, let's come to you on that.
That's a real tough question. David Moyes, his team played some pretty decent stuff at times. Remember the 5-0 win against Leverkusen?
Yeah.
Shinji Kagawa, Ryan Giggs, Wayne Rooney were playing some lovely stuff. So I think it's just a difference in style. I think the big issue was David Moyes is more of a reactive manager. Van Gaal is more of a progressive. Basically what I mean there is Lou Van Gaal's sides want the ball. David Moyes' sides are happy to not have the ball. It's a difficult one. It really is. I think that potentially they could have played better football. On the counter-attack, if they had the same pace in the side, a la Memphis Depay, Yann Azai obviously performed very, very well under Moyes. So I'm going to say we've got to wait for this Man United team this season. Hopefully they will click.
A huge part of that, Adam, is would Memphis have signed for David Moyes?
Well, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
That's
big news.
Will Arsenal win the league under Wenger? At Arteta Assist, asking that one. I'm going to say no. not before he retires.
I'll probably be inclined to agree.
Yeah. If he sorts his midfield defensive issues out, yes. If not, no.
I always get your name wrong so much. James Halloran. I'm sorry. If United sign Neymar or any other special players, would they actually become deadly in the Premier League? Dave, you sort of mentioned earlier about they're missing that world class.
Neymar can play central defence.
Neymar would be good. He's playing for a new contract, as always, players have done, using the name of Manchester United, disrespecting that name.
But they are missing that world-class player, as you mentioned.
They definitely are, yes. They're missing someone that can change a game. But then, like Lawrence mentioned, they are missing centre-halves more to get to that next level in the Premier League. To become deadly in the Premier League, so I think it's two things. It's scoring goals and being deadly defensively. And that's what they haven't got this season. But a sign like Neymar would definitely pick everybody up at the club. They would become better on the offence. But it's more than that. I think it's the fluidity. It's getting everything together. Everything needs to click. That's the thing. And you don't know where these players can come in and will make it click. We've seen, Angel Di Maria come in and it didn't click. So, question marks.
Alex Emery on Twitter. Alex James Emery said, does Joe Gomez's early form prove that more Premier League clubs should sign championship youngsters, Lawrence?
I don't know if it proves, but it certainly alludes to the idea, at least, doesn't it? I mean, it was a great performance. But, what I was surprised with was that he ended up going to Liverpool. I think I heard Arsenal were in for him at one point. He's a great signing. And Brendan Rodgers, the good thing for Joe is that Liverpool didn't have anyone that was dominating that position, and Moreno seems to not be considered in that way. It was an interesting tactical shift last night when they almost played two left backs at one point, Liverpool, which was fascinating. So when they brought Oxlade-Chamberlain on, basically he went, all right, two left backs. And then you had Moreno and Gomez to shut him down, and either one or the other would break. So that was quite interesting tactically, because both of them could take it forward quite well. He's grown into the role apparently very, very well. You can't always tell how players are going to do that. But, Liverpool bought from QPR when they had, Sterling. It's not common for people to buy from lower league.
We just Spurs signed Dele Alli, who looked all right against Leicester. He looked decent, didn't he?
Dele Alli, great name. It sounds like a food corridor.
Yeah, it does indeed. A lot of people ask about Borussia Dortmund, so let me try and get them all in one go. So CEI Sharif.
No, it's not better than Klopp.
What does BBV's fantastic season start say about Jurgen Klopp?
Says that
maybe
he
wasn't that vital after all.
No,
Lawrence.
It says that he developed a great squad and a very buccaneering, impressive, good to get behind philosophy that he then passed on to another coach who is being very humble in the way that he assesses his own achievements at the club so far, and someone who's trying to play down the idea that this is all only him. Mm-hmm. What it does show is that they made some very small changes, apparently to diet and early season training. The players do look fitter. Mm-hmm. The players do look like they're eating better, etc., etc. So it shows that what he did was he laid down a blueprint at the club, and it's a blueprint that is going very well so far this season. Even if they've tweaked it, which they have ever so slightly, it still still there.
Dave, let me follow up on what Lawrence is saying there with another question. So,
round two.
Piotr Gala, Peter the Polish on Twitter says, BVB analysis, please. As a BVB fan, I would greatly appreciate it. Talk about Borussia Dortmund predictions, where they'll finish. Right, I'm going to give you one at a time here. Very briefly, where do you think you're going to finish this season?
Okay, personally, so Lawrence's points were fantastic. Jurgen Klopp, great ground roots of the game. The thing that what Tuchel's come in and done is he's changed the system. He's gone, instead of playing two holding midfielders in a 4-2-3-1, he's now playing a 4-1-4-1. He's got one holding midfielder in Julian Welt, who's been absolutely awesome, 19-year-old, check him out, brilliant player. But what it's done, he's given the confidence back. Shinji Kagawa looks like a new man. Omric Mkhitaryan, he's just completely changed. Last season, I think he went like 50, 60 shots without scoring. This season, he scored two goals already in the Bundesliga. He looks so, so sharp. It's really interesting how a new manager coming in, give you new confidence, change the style up a bit. They're much better on the ball. The defensive midfielder drops in between the centre halves and they move the ball very well. I think they're going to be second in this season because they are playing very much like Bayern Munich. It's really interesting how when Jurgen Klopp was in, Dortmund set the tone of the style of play, the 4-2-3-1 counter-attacking. Heckel's copied that when Bayern the Champions League. Similar to what's happening now, Guardiola's come in playing this ball-playing philosophy. Tuchel has come in now and he's also playing this ball-playing philosophy. So it's going to be really, really interesting. I cannot wait for the Clasicas. They're going to be brilliant.
Well, apparently Tuchel had some intimate meetings with Pep at one point. And they discussed quite a lot of things, which is interesting.
Dave, you've pretty much covered everything that was asked for there by Peter. He said, talk about the tactics, talk about the wonder kid, talk about where Dortmund is strengthened, yada, yada. He also said, love you guys, which is a nice way to answer the question.
When you mentioned the youngsters, we did get feedback on young players last week.
I'm going to come on to that before I wrap it up.
Just want to make sure, Adam, because we've got a lot of feedback that we don't cover that people get pissed off
we've
about.
We've got a couple of minutes. I want to whip through these questions very quickly. I want one sentence answers. Okay? Lawrence, Hugh Boucher said, what do you make of Pedro's debut?
Fantastic. Looks great in a black kit. Really enjoyed the way that he dived at the back line. Some people talking about the way that he ruins wingers, Mourinho that is. Look at the likes of Robin, Duff, etc., etc. Pedro's in a very similar mould. Very interesting at looking at how often he played and therefore maybe his acceptance and mindset when approaching the way that Mourinho will play him at Chelsea.
That was the longest one sentence ever. I loved it.
Hyphenated.
Joe Batista says, Man City Invincibles, Dave.
No.
Next.
Joe Batista also asks, Lawrence, please can you go off as a rant as you did last podcast? Thanks,
he
mate.
Did that count
against Jermaine Defoe?
Yeah, he sort of did. You did tell him to fuck off. So, I mean,
my girlfriend did say the other day, she was like, you know what, I like you when you're calm. I was like, okay.
Dave, do you think Ligue 1 is getting boring with PSG already opening up a 4-point gap to Monaco? That was from Nicola F.
No, I think the teams are going to come back a la Lyon, Marseille. They're going to beat Monaco. They just need to hit their form. Don't worry. PSG will drop points.
Dayson Adamson says, who was a better player, R9 or Thierry Henry?
Ooh, boom. Woof.
Answer that in one question, one sentence.
Shit.
Ronaldo on a more varied basis. Thierry Henry had an incredible peak, but Ronaldo was incredible. And what you would say, that's hard, isn't it?
I'm going to go Henry. Longevity, season after season. Ronaldo was a little bit injury prone in his career. Fantastic when he was fit. But Henry had that brilliant spell of about 6 years where he was the best player in the Premier League.
I can't disagree with that. But I mean, Ronaldo also Ronaldo existed in a time just before Henry existed. And they're almost two different eras of football, aren't they? Henry was just beautiful. Whereas it was slightly more majestic than Ronaldo, so maybe I'll change my answer.
R9 never won the Champions League, did he? Or did he not?
They
did in the World Cup, mate. So what does it matter?
But so did Thierry.
Well, there you go. See, God, that is a great question, isn't it?
Good one.
I changed my mind now. I want to go Thierry.
Yeah, let's all go Thierry.
I kind of want to go Ronaldo now.
Chadwick Gonzalez says, Luke. Is Luka Modric the best centre midfielder in the world?
No.
Yes.
Did you see Lucas Leighton's performance on Monday night?
Did you see him, mate? Yeah.
Does Do you know who Sergio Busquets is, lads? Come on.
Oh,
Andres Iniesta, Rakitic, the lads at Barcelona are better than Luka Modric.
He's good. Sorry. He's good.
He is very good.
Great.
Interesting with Real this weekend. They were bloody boring.
Oh, this brings me on to the will be the final question. Perfect.
How's that interesting, Dave?
Faiso Hazala on Twitter said, do you think Madrid are facing another trophyless season? He says he hopes not. I thought it was very interesting that someone's pointing out that Ronaldo, how long has he been at Real Madrid now? What, 7 years?
2008, I think he moved.
Seven, eight years?
Almost seven. This will be his seventh year, won't it?
He hasn't actually won a massive amount of major trophies.
So he's title, won the, should have stayed in Manchester, Ronaldo, if you're listening.
He's won the Champions League, obviously, the La Decima. He's won the league title once, I believe.
You know what, though? I mean, we call it La Decima, and it sounds like this huge achievement because it makes it sound like they've won 10 of them. They only won the one.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
The club's history.
Obviously a massive achievement, but at the same time, two Copa del Reyes, one Super Copa, one UEFA Super Cup, I mean, Club World Cup, they don't really count as major honours, do you know what I mean?
What you do wonder is, if Ronaldo, I think he sort of assumed he'd win a lot more whilst he was there.
Yeah.
And get the chance to move on earlier. And I think...
Like, there's no doubt he's going to go down.
He got sucked into the Real Madrid dream and the dream didn't come.
But he will be the all-time highest Real Madrid scorer ever, which is, he's going to go down in the club history. He will go down as one of the greatest players of all time. But it's just surprising that they haven't won more. You'd think with the resources, the players, the money they've spent.
Yeah.
But they're up against Barcelona, one of the greatest teams of all time.
Going back to the question, they've got one of the, Barcelona are the best team in Europe. So they've got to beat them in a number of competitions.
Maybe even the world, you might say.
In the world, you'd say, 100%. But I think the problem with Madrid is they need to find that fluidity. At the weekend, they just looked dodgy. Gareth Bale isn't really a number 10. You need someone like James Rodriguez, who excels in that position, to play there.
He was on the bench, though, wasn't he, Dave?
Really weird one. Really, really strange one. Benitez is a bit confused. I think get Bale out left, Ronaldo out right, and then play James Rodriguez through the middle behind, Benzema or Jesse Rodriguez. That would work with Benitez. What's he called? James Rodriguez is very, very much like Pablo Neymar. Sorry, Pablo Neymar.
Aymar.
Pablo Aymar. Sorry, Neymar.
What you're going with there is you're going with what we think Benitez wants and what's and then what best fits that.
Yes.
I worry that Benitez's philosophy, the more and more we see it, may be a little bit at odds with what Real Madrid are currently trying to construct. And is he trying to fit a square peg into a round hole sometimes?
Yes.
Let's move on to a little bit of the feedback, a little bit of the response to last week's questions.
Yeah.
So we were talking about the best player outside of Europe's top five leagues. And we sort of put the question out there, you tell us. So we've got a few suggestions here. Connor Hornby says Jetro Williams and also Andres Guardado is a beast for PSV.
Beast, bruv.
Good suggestion. Wild and Crazy Mexican said, I think Jesus M. Corona from Twente is a brilliant young winger that takes people on for fun.
And a job, it turns out. So.
Yeah, it is his job. Alex Kofi says Yassine Brahimi. There's another shout.
Are these lads going over, though? But Brahimi is about 25. Is that still young? Yeah, I love Brahimi. He's sick. He's sick.
25 or under, isn't it? Maybe 23.
Youngish.
23 or under normally. But I mean, if you're playing under 21 squad at the Olympics, you can play.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Oscar Nicholas Anderson said Marcus Rosenberg for Malmo.
Marcus Rosenberg, about 32. Yeah, he's 32.
did we say young players? Or
said best player. Yeah. So, yeah, Marcus Rosenberg, great shout.
Yeah, there you go. It doesn't matter.
And then Barimi, great shout.
Kevin.
That was linked to a question, though, wasn't it? There was something along the lines of
someone asked us
who was the best young player in Europe, wasn't it? So, I don't know.
Was it best player? I think it might have been
someone
best player.
Someone just asked us, best player outside of the top five leagues in Europe.
Sure.
Great shouts, lads.
Matthew Hayden on Twitter says, look at Pione Sisto from FC. Oh my god, it's a Norwegian one. Midgetland.
Midgetland.
I can't believe Dave is teaching me how to pronounce stuff. But Matthew Hayden said him. We also got Kevin Prunty on Twitter saying, Sebastian Giovinco for top player outside of Europe's top five leagues.
Hey,
MLS,
hey,
17 goals, 12 assists, and 54 shots on goal.
He is banging him in. He really is, yeah. And he's next to
you. We also got an absolutely fantastic suggestion for the best back four.
Yeah.
Now, Drogba spelled with a V, says Desailly, Blanc, Thuram, and Lizarazu conceded two goals.
Is a joke.
In France 98. Two goals in the entire tournament. That is...
incredible team.
Quite something.
Brilliant.
Fantastic suggestions. And we've also got a last one here from Aaron E., who wants us to talk about... this is more of a topic from last week, he says. But what do you think about... what do you three think about allowing three foreign players into a squad and only allowing two naturalised as a means to strengthen the national team's success? I am a diehard Mexico fan, and while I enjoy watching Liga MX, I feel although we have the same problem as the BPL at the moment, where all of the stars of the league are foreigners. Yes, the way the system is now is clearly good for business, but if we could simply get past the round of 16 again and then forget all the money in the world. Thoughts? Now, I've heard this suggested in England a number of times about how, you know, we should limit the amount of foreign players that play for the team, yada, yada. But that's actually against European Union rules and laws restricting...
Aaron, you're not allowed to do that in Europe, pal.
Yeah, so in Europe you can't do that. You can't restrict someone else in the European Union working in another country. That applies to football. You can't, you know, put quotas on it and caps and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But I mean, what do you guys make of what Aaron's saying there about maybe that could work in other leagues?
I see what his point is. I mean, I think sport especially should be, you should be able to put rules on it like that, because it's about fairness, but in another way, and about the development of the sport overall. And that's part of the problem. It depends what your end goal is. If your end goal is globalization, and essentially that's what the Premier League is it's a product of a time when we were sold globalization, then, you know, don't put your caps on, because, or, you know, at some point they may choose to put a cap on because it's more marketable. That's kind of it. Is most people say, well, you know, the market dictates, and the market dictates that actually we need to have more players from all these different countries. Well,
does the market also dictate, does it not dictate that we should be producing better players then?
Because that's the point, Dave, is that actually the Premier League's reply to that would be, well, the market in the end will mean that those players will come through and it'll go in waves. But the problem being, I mean, we're seeing this in the real world right now, is that the problem is the market is A, human construction, and B, such an unpredictable place that you don't always get what you wish for, and only certain people will. So there are going to be people making immense amounts of money from having foreign players in the league and bringing those players in. Difficult to displace those guys, because the power structure dictates that they will be the more powerful people and therefore have a bigger say. And so you sort of have this issue of, you know, do we begin to cap things? Do we begin to try and get more centralized control? And then some people say, well, that's not free. Or do we say, well, it's for the greater good, and that, you know, we need to give people the chance? And what we then have to acknowledge, that's going to make for a different spectacle to the one that we are currently constructing or is currently being constructed.
Mm.
I know that's a very sort of pithy, vague answer, but it probably requires like a whole podcast. It's a really great paragraph that's written there. And I think it's a really interesting subject. I'd love to know what other
interesting
people think.
Debate.
Would you, because for instance, there are people who are English who are coming through. Mm. You know, Joe Gomez is one at Liverpool. Henderson is another one at Liverpool. Ives another one at Liverpool. Sterling's one at Man City. Shaw's one at Manchester United.
Kane, Mason.
That, to some extent. Mason, Dyer, right? Wow, a number of young English players. Harry Kane. There's a number of young English players who are thriving in the league. And I think sometimes, you know, we can go down the Daily Mail route. I know, I mean, the top comment on YouTube this week is Lawrence loved the sound of his own voice. But, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to...
I love it as well, Lawrence.
Where's that?
Answer. It's my short answer.
Where's
that? That way. It's on a Football Daily video, I think.
Oh, yeah. Old news.
You'll always get over
there. Let's round it off with three, what Dave has called, banter questions. In the show notes, with a Z at the end of questions.
Dave, write the notes.
Gaia on Twitter, Jill Tomphill, says, if puddles evaporate into the sky and create puddles, if puddles evaporate into the sky and create other puddles, is there only one puddle or many? That is very philosophical.
Lawrence, do you want to go first?
I'd say that there is an ecosystem of water. Do you want to call the whole world a puddle?
We're all just splashing around in it. Great answer.
I'd argue that there's many puddles, but the puddle changes from one puddle to many puddles at the same time. So you're looking at a puddle on the ground, it's in an ecosystem of other puddles. But then when it's in the sky, it's one puddle.
Maybe there's no puddles.
What is a puddle?
I don't know. I feel like I've said the word puddle too many times. It's starting to lose meaning. Man like Urzil 11 on Twitter says, which is worse, Michael Owen's commentary or Mike Williamson?
Michael Owen's commentary. Next.
Worse 11. And then finally, Matt says, is Adam mad about Soldado scoring on his debut?
No.
Why would I be mad? I was saying last week, wasn't I, that Spurs fans love Soldado. They wish him well and fair play to him. He's scoring a goal. I like that. He deserves
it. We all know that would happen, though. We all knew that would happen.
Yeah, of course. When look at Paulinho as well, right? He just scored a DC's banger that he scored for in China. No?
No. Yeah, it was a sick goal, mate. 40 yards out, pretty banged bloody it in the top good. Corner.
You leave Spurs, mate, everything starts coming up Millhouse. Anyway, that is going to wrap up episode 19 of the Front Three. I think that was a great episode, guys. I think we did a great job. Pat on the back for us all there.
Even if you do say so yourself.
Yeah, I think it was great. It was good fun to record anyway, so hopefully people have as much fun.
It was good stuff. Actually, lads, I just deleted all the German names off my phone. It's now hands-free.
What?
Oh, no, Dave. We really need to go. Really, need to go.
I hope you stuck around for that band together.
I am so sorry. Please, leave 5-star ratings.
Where did that come from?
It came from nowhere. Webpage that's spreading this crap today. Dave,
it was like an RKO out of nowhere.
That was the number one joke at the Fringe Festival. I tried to drop it in there, but I lost my time to do it, so I did it at the end, and it was a load of shit.
The most inappropriate time to drop it in, just like randomly, just like
boom. A joke.
Got to wait for the moment. He waited too long for the moment. He dropped it in. But
sorry, lads.
I was like, what is he talking about? I was like, what's going on there? Anyway, I think that's the perfect place to end it. I think that's great. Great banter there to end it on. Guys, Dave, for more banter where can the good people find you? For that classic.
God, I'm crying. It's that funny. But sorry, right. So at Squawker Dave, SQUA. WKA Dave on Twitter, then you'll find my YouTube and it'll be linked together, or try David O'Brien TV on YouTube and some videos, watch them, they're a lot of fun.
Lovely stuff, Lawrence.
Go to Lozcast, LOZCAST. And Adam, what about you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood or on YouTube, The Football Republic. We have just hit 36,000 subscribers. They said it could never be done, but it was.
No one said that, Adam.
No one did say that. I'm lying. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration. And Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.